Now, then you were born in San Francisco. Did you miss San Francisco, or do you go...
Oh, yes, I do. I miss San Francisco very much. I hate to say it, I mean, this is speak candidly, if it weren't for the fact that the motion picture business is centered down here, I don't think I'd be here much longer. I have a very strong feeling about San Francisco because I think it's a very thriving, a very active city, and because of the compactness of the city and the intermingling of the different people that brings them so close because of the city itself.
Could it be that you have more Chinese friends? But do you have more Chinese friends or American friends in your
life? I would say it's hard to say. If I look back and count the boys that I grew up with, whom, even though we don't see each other over periods of years, we still have a very strong bond. More like it's a fraternal bond. From the standpoint of business and this type of thing, it would be naturally, I think, mostly Caucasian because they're all involved in the motion picture industry, and whatever business I've been involved in, it's been with Caucasian people. Because of the fact that the type of work that I've been doing, especially in public relations work, my identity as an American Chinese is even more beneficial because I'm more easily identified. My background in motion pictures has been a great help because of the identity with the two major series that I've worked in, the Charlie Chan series and Bonanza.
Do you have any friends that are of black origin? Do you associate
very few
with them?
No, only those that I've worked with. I can this boy and I spy. As a matter of fact, I hardly ever see them from after the shows are through. There's one boy who is he's really just assistant manager of a hardware store where I trade, and we became kind of friendly because of the very nature of getting information on what to do with certain tools and how to put things together, you know. But that's informative. It's more, I don't think I have any, a close bond or a close relationship with any black
person.
How
about Chicanos? Do you have any chance to be very close to some of them?
No, only those that I've worked with. Mm-hmm. Again, it's just strictly a business relationship.
How about non-Chinese Asians? You know, like people from Vietnam or Burma and things like that?
Very few. Very few. I think because my circle of movement is more or less, or my activities control the people that I associate with. In other words, I would not actually become involved with, say, a Vietnamese person or a Vietnamese woman. Either I worked with them or I went to a restaurant where they worked and we came. It's type of a superficial relationship.
So, all right, back to when you first went to Fox, hopefully to sell some chemicals. What kind of chemicals were you selling then?
Oh, it was a moth-proofing and flame-proofing, a liquid that turned out to be a dud.
Oh.
They mix in with paint and paint it on. It's supposed to fireproof.
I see.
And moth-proof furniture and walls. And the thought that I had at that time, I thought it would be a great product because of the sets. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're all prefab or, you know, plywood and... the fire hazard, the insurance that would help to bring the insurance cost down.
But is that the company still in existence?
No, they folded after a year and a half.
I see. Because it proved that the thing did not
work. It didn't work. So actually it was sort of an act of God that I read that article in the paper, you know.
All right. So now, do you feel that you are more Chinese or more American? You feel you're American? You feel you're
I feel actually, I feel more American in terms of my activities, my behavior, my taste, my aptitude, attitudes. But I still feel very, very Chinese in terms of my respect for the older people, my respect for China, my admiration for China and the Chinese people, what they've done, aside from the fact that they are... there have been different political eras in China, the Chinese people have continued. And I feel very much a part of it. And I think it's that heritage that has made me able to survive through the life that I have here in the United States as an American Chinese.
Are you able to carry on a conversation in Chinese, either Cantonese or Mandarin?
Fairly so. I mean, I can. Matter of fact, I went to Hong Kong my first time in 1973, just on a tourist group, with a tourist group, and I was able to converse. And I was very proud of the fact that my accent, my Chinese accent, was very, potong, you know, it was clear enough where they could understand me. And I could understand them and carry on, not into the deep philosophical dissertations, but simple things like buying or asking directions, ordering food in a restaurant, and inquiring about ingredients and types of materials and clothing. And was very, I felt very good about it.
Now, you said you had a very good feeling for the Chinese and all that. Did you ever feel sorry for being a Chinese yourself?
Never. I never have. I guess it could be fatalistic in a way, an attitude. But I think more than that, it's an acceptance of what you are. What I am is what I am. I mean, I can't change it. I can improve, but I can't change. And this was drilled into me by my father. From the beginning, as he would tell me, even when I'm working, doing things slovenly, even washing the dishes, he was very meticulous. He's a disciplinarian as far as putting things away and keeping things in order. And I learned, and I found he was right.
You often mention about your father and how much he had influenced you in your young life, but how about your mother?
Oh, unfortunately, I didn't get to know my mother because she passed away when I was 4 years old, during the influenza epidemic.
Oh, 4 years old, huh?
So I really didn't know her.
Now, right now, when you were younger and living at home with your father, did you ever use Chinese medicines or when you were sick?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Nothing, yu yao, you know.
What kind? Oh, some kind of...
Sal, yu yao is
oil.
And then I remember...
Medicine or oil?
It's an oil, yi yao. And they didn't have ba fa yao in those days, but it's similar to... The other was the tiger balm.
Oh.
You know, that's for surface, superficial.
Yes.
Now, tou jai cha. You know, or ngsi cha.
Ngsi cha.
Yeah, for your
upset
stomach. That's about the things that were, those were basic remedies.
Did you eat any kind of food cooked with Chinese herbs?
Oh, yes. Yes, I wish I knew what they were now.
Oh, all right.
My father, I don't know.
What was it that you ate?
Well, Dan ngau yuk, you know, with I know gei chi wai san, I guess you call it.
Wai san gei chi,
you know.
Bucky fong dong.
Whatever it is, yeah. All that stuff. My dad used to make all that stuff, you know, steamed in the inner jar and with the herbs and all, and then drink the broth. Gai chao, you know.
Gai chao. Did you ever cook any ginseng, Chinese?
No, I never have.
But do you use all these Chinese medicines now, still?
No, I use ba fa yao. Yeah, I'll use it a lot because it's for surface itches or whatever, you know. And sometimes, like sore muscles, it's very good, very good. And then, aside from that, my cooking at home, since I'm by myself, I would say that 75% of the cooking that I do is for myself is Chinese cooking, Chinese type cooking, mm-hmm. Variations of, you know.
What are your favorite dishes?
It's hard to say. My favorite dish is improvisation.
Oh.
In other words, I like to improvise. What I like to do is try to doctor up something if I have left over and make another dish. Mm-hmm. Or using all these different, you know, now they have wonderful chili sauces that come from I think it's from Vietnam. They're very hot. I like to use curries. I use oyster sauce, phu yu, you know, the bean cake, tau si, and then for soups, I love soups, and I always use like hong zhou and the bat gok, you know, depending if it's beef, mm-hmm. hong zhou, and then some the mushrooms, and then of course a lot of times I use hamai, which is the shrimp. A lot of most of the condiments I used are imported from China, and these I learned to use when I was a kid, watching my father cook, you know.
But for American-born Chinese, you are really quite Chinified in this respect, huh?
Yes, I think so. I would say that's why I say it's part of me. It's culture. I guess you would say Chinified if that's the expression you want to use.
That's the word that I coined myself.
Chinified. Yeah, that's good.
Now then, I understand you put out a cookbook. Can you tell me something about that Chinese cookbook?
It's a cookbook, and I'm not very happy with it. So now that it's sold out, and
how many did you sell?
I don't know exactly how many because of the printing. It must have been about maybe 20,000.
20,000 is a whole lot.
No, but it went through six printings, and. There's one thing in particular that I used. A lot of the recipes I had MSG, which is Meijing, you know. And I'd like to eliminate that from the recipes because there are a lot of repercussions about the use of MSG today, scientifically and medically.
So, in other words, in your new cookbook,
yes,
coming out soon, you are going to eliminate them.
Yes. I wanted to get some more accurate research on it because I would like to give something like in the prologue or at the beginning a dissertation on the benefits or non-benefits of MSG.
Now, what prompted you to come out with your first cookbook? Because you're not a writer.
No. What happened, I was involved in a skyjack, a plane that was skyjacked in San Francisco.
What year was
this? This was 1972. And I was shot in the back, and I was laid up in the hospital. And during that time, since I was in San Francisco, my sister was in Berkeley, so we decided to just, you know, gather together some recipes just for old time's sake, for the benefit of the youngsters, the grandchildren, the grandnephews. And then it got to the point where I had so many. I said, gee, we got enough here. Let me write a book. So I wrote the book.
Oh, that was
That's
wonderful.
How it happened.
Uh-huh. And what year was that when that first book came out?
1973.
Yeah.
Then,
all right. Then for your recreation, Victor, what do you like to do?
Well, I used to play a lot of golf. A lot of golf. I wasn't good, but I played. And this hijacking thing kind of changed my whole attitude. I was more concerned about the value of time. And then looking back again to my father, how he used his time. He was busy all the time. And I started thinking, now, when I was playing golf, I was out on the golf course 4 days, 3 days a week. That's all day, just about, by the time you get tee off and get through and come back in and all. Then you're out the driving range at night practicing and hitting balls. So you wind up spending all that time just on the driving range and on the golf course. So I decided to be a little more productive. And that's how I happened to start the book
I see. But that is not your recreation, though. I mean, would you like to play mahjong or
no.
music?
Music I used to. I used to sing a lot. And I studied voice for 2 years with Nina Koshetz. I used to sing in choruses and choral groups. And when I was younger, I used to sing in the church choir, and then I belonged to choral groups, just for fun. But I don't do it now. I used to sing in a club. I sang in the nightclub for about 2 years, the Forbidden City in San Francisco.
Oh.
and emceed the shows. But I don't know. I think one of my big—you can't even call it exercise, I guess. Although there's a lot of exercise in it right now. In the last 6 or 7 months, I've been trying to fix up the place that I'm living. You know, it's an old house and it involves a lot of manual labor. You know, tearing out walls and carpenter work and painting. And so that's my physical labor.
Actually, you don't actually sit down to listen to radio or TV for recreation like most people do. You're always doing something for recreation.
When it comes to TV, I'm very particular.
This is the end of the duplicate of tape 1, side 1 of the interview with Victor Sen-Yong.